The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private. Trusted experts in orthopedic, spine, eye, cancer and cardiology.
This is News Talk.
We've lots of guests to talk about this who know a lot more than I do, starting with Tony O'Brien, who's the former CEO of the HSE. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jonathan.
I mean, this is a screw-up. There's no point in describing it in any other way, but it is a reflection of the pressure that the system is under. The question I have this morning is, how come they didn't ramp up contact tracing in the eventuality that we would have thousands of cases being diagnosed?
Well, I don't actually know the answer to that question, but I think we have to balance this. You know, so you can either see this as an understaffing issue or an overwhelming issue, and I think probably the truth lies somewhere in between. But it's also the case that when you get to a certain level of new cases every day, the ability of the system to ramp up and deal with that in the speedy way that we'd all like it to be done is going to be extremely challenged. And I would take the view that whilst everybody is different, certainly if I was to receive a positive COVID test, my first port of call, I think, would be to contact everyone I knew I'd been in contact with in the relevant period myself. So at some point, we do have to balance individual responsibility and what the state can do. And because we're now going into level five, we're doing that because effectively the COVID is currently out of control. And any system is capable of being overwhelmed in a situation like that, unfortunately.
The WHO has repeatedly said that the way to deal with this is to hunt it down. We've now got 2,500 people in the wind who were told that they were positive, who we assume are doing the right thing. But the people that they've been in close contact with may be blissfully ignorant and may have the illness and may be spreading it further. The effort we're currently undergoing for the next 6 weeks to suppress this virus, this isn't a great start, is it?
No, it's not. And I'm sure that none of the people currently responsible for this would want it to be in this situation. But what is positive, and I think we should be acknowledging this, is that they've been very open and transparent about the situation that's now unfolded. They haven't tried to hide this. They've come out hands up. And they've entered into discussions with general practitioners. They're communicating with all the individuals involved. And we have a simple choice at this precise moment. Yeah, we'd like it to be better, but we are where we are. And everyone involved needs to do their own little bit to overcome this particular problem, while the people currently in charge of the health system are indeed in the process of recruiting more contract tracers. And don't forget, one of the ways they dealt with this before was to redeploy lots of staff from other services, which were badly needed. And this time around, what they're trying to do is keep all those other services operating. And unfortunately, yeah, this wave has hit them quite hard.
That said, I just my own experience, I know in University College Cork that a lot of the staff there had been redeployed into a contact tracing centre that was wound down and wasn't wound back up when we knew the surge was coming. Equally, there are lots and lots of call centres that probably have capacity around the country that are very good at this kind of thing and could be used. So, I mean, we do seem to have missed the trick here, where the opportunity was there to build up that capacity, as has been done elsewhere, as has been done in the actual physical testing, by the way. And we cannot underestimate the fact that at least people are finding out that, yes, they are positive through the tests. And that's a good thing. It's just this other leg seems to either have fallen away, has been underestimated, or we've just gotten it wrong.
Well, they've done tremendously well on the testing, as you've said. The problem is that far more of those tests are now coming up positive as a percentage. And that then leads into this contact tracing issue. And not to diminish the undoubted abilities of everyone who works in a call centre, a contact tracing is a little bit more involved and a little bit more developed, and you can't just switch that over to a call centre. But it does start with the individual. So at some point, the individual who's tested positive is going to have to identify who they've been in contact with in any event. And what they've done on this occasion is that, in addition to identifying, to the extent that you can, please pass on with this pre-formatted text message this information, enabling them to contact their GP to get a test. Now, while it's not ideal, I think for most people who do test positive, and there is no shame in testing positive, let's be clear about that, first port of call would be normally to try and contact the people you've been in touch with, which are typically your friends, your family, your work colleagues. So they're people you'd want to be in contact with anyway, to let them know that they're at risk of COVID-19. So no one's going to say where we are is ideal, but I think that their response to the problem that they have is not inappropriate. They're doing the right thing. They're being open about it. they're being honest about it, and they're providing a guidance on what individuals can do to help in this situation.
But there's two elements, and one of which I'm trying to find out the answer to is the app, which is a great thing. It's designed here in Ireland. It's being used elsewhere. For that to work, you have to get a code off the HSE's contact tracing team to put into the app so that that does its thing. These people don't even have that line of defence. And that, to me, is just devastating. I mean, maybe the text that they're going to get today might give them the code to upload. I don't know. But, I mean, we've lost that other line of defence here as well if contact tracing are not going to get to those people.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have the information or knowledge to be able to tell you how this interplays with the app. But clearly, it would be better if there were sufficient contract tracers to do this. But even if they had scaled up to what might be considered a reasonable level, I think what we're seeing at the moment would be likely to have exceeded their current capacity. And this could have happened, perhaps not at this scale, but there could well have been situations where either the delays or the length of time required to complete contract tracing would drift out to the point where it's not ideal, or there'd be some contacts that couldn't be traced. And asking individuals to play their part, I don't think, is wrong. It's not ideal, but it's not wrong.
OK, Tony O'Brien, former CEO of the HSE, thanks for that. Dr. Sarah Doyle is a consultant in public health with the HSE who is working every hour God sends, I can only imagine. Sarah, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you? Because, I mean, I have to ask you that question, first of all, because you are at the sharp end of this particularly pointy stick. What has it been like for you guys in the last while?
How am I? I'm fine. I'm bearing up and I'm sticking with it. And I think that's one of the most important things that we can do, and I suppose for everybody to do, because this is tough for us all. And yeah, it has been extremely busy. And for me and for all my colleagues in public health, but also actually for other colleagues across the HSE, whether that be in management, communications, operations. It's always risky to start naming people because I might leave someone out. But yeah, it has been very, very busy, and we are really doing our best to rise to this challenge and to ensure that we can respond as best we can to this pandemic, to try and get people to as normal a life as we can get them.
Is this simply a volume issue, that so many cases went into the system last week that it overwhelmed the existing resources, or did something else go wrong as well?
No, I mean, I think what this really is it's about the fact that we're in a pandemic and that, you know, this virus is very contagious and it is spreading now, you know, we know within the community. The other aspect of the large number or volume of cases is actually that we are better now at detecting cases than we were in the spring. So we're detecting a lot more people who are asymptomatic or who don't have symptoms, and also maybe young people who are mildly symptomatic. And, you know, it sounds, you know, sort of odd, but, you know, that's actually a good thing, you know. So in some ways, you know, it's a good thing that we are detecting cases and we're letting people know that, look, you have COVID-19 and now you need to isolate. So people are now getting a text message straight up. And I know that's a little bit unusual. It's not what is, you know, done in normal times, but it is the kind of immediate response to say, look, you have COVID-19 now and you need to self-isolate.
But no, and that's good, because that means they can hunker down and that's them
exactly
done. But then it gives rise to the question of, everybody will ask, what's a close contact? And I know it can be written down, but when you're in a panic because you've just been told you've got this awful illness, is it a close contact? What is a close contact? I met my mother yesterday for 5 minutes. She was on the other side of the room. Is she a close contact? I mean, the definition is clear once you speak to somebody who can give you the authority on it. But it's a lot to ask people who are in a crisis to take on the responsibility of a public health expert.
Sure, it is. And I guess, you know, our response at the different phases of this, you know, are, I suppose, they change depending on, you know, the nature of the infection or the epidemiology or where we are in the pandemic. So when we have low numbers of cases and we can have kind of, you know, specialists in public health medicine and doctors and nurses, you know, overseeing kind of contact tracing, and we're very low levels, that's what we do. And then as things increased, you know, we brought on new people, people into contact tracing centres, and they've been skilled up and we're continuing to do that. And that's the, you know, that that's the next phase, you know, and that's what we have been doing. And I guess what we're doing now is we're saying, look, how can we manage with this volume of cases and with this number of people? Unfortunately, we're unable to reach them all by phone at the moment in a timely fashion or as soon as possible. So I suppose what we're saying is we're going to try and get in touch with them somehow. So they get the text message, and then that has a link to the website, and it says, you know, what do I do now? How do I identify my close contacts? So I would say exactly what you're saying, Jonathan, and we're absolutely aware of it. And some people will, you know, would take this in their stride, and some people will be very concerned and worried. So what I would say is sit down, draw a breath, you know, maybe ring somebody you're close to, give them a call, say, look, can we chat through this? You know, don't panic, just sit down, you know, take out a piece of paper, look at the link, work down through it, and it work, you know, that will guide you through it. And I mean, I can kind of, you know, outline some of that here, or you know,
well, I'm going to go through that with yourself and with Ray Wally, who's on the line. But there's one text in from a listener here who is currently living with COVID-19 and had to do this by the look of the text message. They had to do it because contact tracing took nearly a week to get to them. Can you ask whether, if I was wearing a mask, does that qualify as a close contact if it was 2 metres with a mask? Does that mean many more people will fall into the need to be tested?
Okay, and I mean, just you've pointed out something that I suppose was becoming a reality, and we were hearing about on the ground, is that we were getting a little bit delayed in contacting people, and so, you know, some people had gone to their GP, or they had identified their close contacts, and they had gone to their GP already. So to some extent, we're almost formalising that and giving people a guidance around that just for these 3 days. And then we're coming back to, you know, doing our phone calls for people. And the aim is to get in touch with them as soon as possible. What I would say is, in terms of the mask is, and in terms of, you know, identifying close contacts, you know, I would say that in a kind of a casual situation, and somebody, you know, let's say you're asking somebody who's not a professional to assess that situation, I would be doing it on a precautionary basis. And if in doubt, I would include them. So I would not take into account the mask wearing. Now, that's not in any way to, you know, to undermine the message about mask wearing for prevention. So really, really important, the mask wearing for prevention. We do know that particularly if the person who has COVID is wearing the mask, it does help to reduce the risk of spread. But what you're doing in a situation where you know somebody has COVID, that's a different circumstance. And now what we're trying to do is identify the people who are at highest risk. So we're not asking people to be sure, absolutely sure, that they've covered every single person who might possibly you know, have been in close contact with them. We're asking them to identify the people who are at higher risk. Okay. And I mean, the easiest of that is, for example, your household contacts. You know, they're very clear.
Well, what about your work contacts? If you spend time with somebody in work for less than 15 minutes, but they were at slightly under 2 metres, do they need to get checked?
So the rule of thumb is the more than 2 minutes for more than 15 minutes. And, you know, I'd be very hopeful.
2 metres for 15 minutes. That's the rule.
Yeah, apologies. Yes, exactly. And again, you know, what I'd be very hopeful of is that, you know, and I do know, because I've spoken to lots of workplaces and lots of people about this, is that, you know, workplaces are, you know, are adapted insofar as they can be, such that, you know, people aren't going to have been in close contact. But, you know, if you've spent more than 15 minutes within the 2 metre distance, yes, that does constitute a close contact.
That's the close contact. Can I just like one last question, Sarah? My thought right now is that GPs who are swamped with calls already, and GPs receptionists who are doing their best with the phones ringing off the hooks, they're going to get a hell of a lot of calls because of this. And what advice are you giving people today about calling their GP if they get a text from you to say, sorry guys, contact tracing can't get to you, ring your GP? I mean, they're all going to try and ring at the same time, which is going to be meltdown.
Yeah, and so again, I mean, this has been done in conjunction with our GP colleagues and in discussion with them. And I suppose, you know, our GP colleagues are as aware as we are of, you know, the difficulty of the situation at the moment. And as you say, that, you know, they're swamped swamped is an unfortunate term, but they're very, very busy and we're very busy. And it's really about trying to manage this as best we can, both between our GP colleagues, ourselves, and also the public coming on board. And again, we are asking the public now to, you know, and those people who have tested positive over the weekend to kind of be proactive now as well. And what we're asking them to do is to send, they're getting the text message to ask them to go online and identify their close contacts. And then they'll also get a second text message that they can send on to those close contacts. And those people, there's also a link for them to look on the website. And,
okay.
And what we're advising them to do is to go to their GP for a test and also to restrict their movements for 14 days.
Okay, Dr. Sarah Doyle, Consultant of Public Health with the HSE, thank you so much for joining us. Let's speak to one of those GPs, Dr. Ray Wally, who's a GP based in Dublin, where a lot of the cases obviously would have been identified. You're talking, probably the bones of about 600 cases in Dublin confirmed during this period. Ray, your phones are hopping already, I'm presuming.
Good morning. General practice is busy and unfortunately it's going to be even more busy.
What do you make of this, Ray, as somebody who is the front line? Because you're dealing with very stressed people every day. It's grand for us here on Newstalk to be talking about it in the round, but you're dealing with the panic, you're dealing with the lackadaisical, you're dealing with the chaos that COVID can bring into a household. Something like this happening is not going to help your cause.
No, but we are in a second wave or second surge. It is a supply and demand issue. It was evident up in Donegal a few weeks ago when they got incredible numbers and GPs to some extent had to do it there. So to be honest, I wasn't surprised. And we're being asked to do this for a short period. It is good that they have acknowledged the issue quickly because definitely speed trumps perfection, as Mike Ryan says. And we're lucky to have a general practice workforce which will hopefully carry a lot of this, but it is going to be tough. We realise that and we can only do it for a short term.
Let's go through the nuts and bolts, Ray, if we can. And I know that Sarah touched on this. A close contact for the purposes of needing to go for a test is somebody in whose company you spend 15 minutes at 2 metres or less. And outside of that, they are not a close contact that requires a test. Is that the nuts and bolts of this?
That's the nuts and bolts. What we will not be doing as GPs is doing contact tracing. What will happen will be that the HSE will send a text to a select group of people who already they know. The HSE contact tracing will continue to prioritise those in at-risk groups over 70 and schools. So we will have a select group of people who will be given a text to say, unfortunately, you're positive. We now want you to identify your close contacts and we want to send on a specific text to those close contacts. And when those close contacts who are identified receive that text, the first thing they've got to do is understand they now need to restrict their movements for the next 14 days, irrespective of what any test tells them. They are on 14 days restricted movement. They try to contact that group of people now, which is obviously an extended group of people, will contact their GP, and GP will get back to them. Now, the GP may not get back to them the same day. The GP may get back to them the next day. But either which way, that individual is on 14 days restricted movement.
What about the individuals who are there going, oh, God, I can't ring John. Oh, Jesus, I can't tell John that I had it. No, I can't ring him. I can't. What do you say to that individual? And they're out there. Let's not deny it.
Well, not only they're putting the health of that individual at risk, and they're putting the health of the extended group of people who that individual may have met at risk. So this is about responsible behaviour. We are supposedly all in this together. So unfortunately, people will have to confront those type of messages and do the right thing. Because ultimately, this is all about keeping your friends and families healthy. And we can only do that by everybody doing the right thing.
The other element, of course, that is at play here, if you have symptoms, and there are people who are picking this up in the community and do not know where they're coming from. If you have symptoms, and that they're desperate to get through to their GP and they can't because the phones are ringing off the hook. What advice do you give them?
Well, again, for the last number of weeks, we've had significant community spread being that you don't necessarily know where you've got it. My experience of the majority of people who are ringing my surgery and other surgeries is that they're getting a same phone day contact back if they're symptomatic. Our practice staff throughout the country are differentiating between those who are symptomatic and those who are not symptomatic. And we are prioritising those calls back to those who are symptomatic. So people should continue to phone, be patient. If they are symptomatic, they still need to do the right thing, which consists of individual isolation. And they need to, because they know what we're going to say to them by now, that if somebody rings me who is symptomatic, those symptoms being cough, shortness of breath, loss of taste, loss of smell, breathlessness, fever, if they're symptomatic, we're going to tell them isolate, and we're going to tell all the cohabitants that they're living with to restrict their movement.
Okay.
So whatever time they get that call back, they need to do the same thing.
Okay. And again, it's common sense, but when it happens, you mightn't be thinking straight. So that is the guide. Finally, Ray, are you seeing evidence, and are there people that you are telling to isolate who you know are not? As we heard in Donegal, that there were people wandering the streets after they were being told to stay in. I mean, are you aware of that happening still? Or are people taking this more seriously now?
I think people are taking it more seriously. Certainly, I have, over the last number of months, been evident on occasion that you ring somebody and you realise they're on a bus and you're saying to them, but I told you, you cannot be on that bus. And like, you know, at the end of the day, my job is not to be the judgmental police. What we're trying to do is coax people to do the right thing, because everybody has a mother and a father, a brother and a sister. And this, the only way you can keep them well is by you doing the right thing, which is isolate. So unfortunately, you know, it is about repeating the same message all the time. You know, and the message I like to go from this is that if people are contacted as being a contact, they need to isolate for 14 days from the last time they met that person. And if the test comes back negative when we get it, they're still on the same 14 days of restricted movement.
Mm. And the second test, they have to go for that. I mean, half of them aren't turning up, according to the Irish Independent this morning. As well, is that frustrating you?
It is, and we need to look into how we deal with that, and we need to probably reinvigorate the messaging. Like everything, the nature of a pandemic is you've got to confront all the things you get right and all the things you get wrong to figure out how you do it again. And we need to sit and watch over each other and constructively criticise close people to us if they're doing it wrong, be it from anxiety, be it from disregard for others' health. But I think the majority of people are listening. If there's one benefit from going to level 5, we understand the consequences of not doing the right thing, because ultimately it's all in our own hands to do the right thing here.
OK, we'll leave it there. Dr. Ray Whalley, Dublin-based GP. I'll leave you go back to answering your phones, Ray, because I know they are probably hopping and patients looking to talk to you.